In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh, yeah. Alan Adams of The Main Edge in studio with us. Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everybody in the family, Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Seems like old times, Al. Huh?
I know, right? It's nice. It's a nice little walk down memory lane in here right now.
By the way, a message from Wayne Harvey wants to know if there are any lingering wiffle ball issues with you.
Oh, just bruised pride, I would say. Like a lit on fire. Me and my team of misfits. I thought we'd at least have a fair showing. I thought it wouldn't be the skunk fest that it was, but it was terrible. It was terrible. There wasn't even time for me to make fun of Hal Wiffle or anything like that. Like, that's usually a fun peripheral thing that I get to do. But
too
no,
busy
none of that.
Getting your ass kicked to do that.
Yeah, well, first I was soaked out of the gate, and then it just went downhill from there. Like, wet t-shirt contest, fatty. Time to play baseball.
Oh, man. Mr. Adams, how was your weekend?
It was good. Yeah, no, I had a lovely weekend. I did some entertaining at home. Had some folks, some dinner party type stuff. And then actually yesterday,
Our invitation must have been lost in the mail.
That's what happens.
I'm so sorry about that, you guys. Like, I'll do my best.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
I can taste the sorry.
Yes.
I mean, I can feel it. I can feel it.
It's bitter.
It is.
And then yesterday, we went over and spent a couple of hours at the new Orno Brewing Company location.
Oh.
There over on Margin Way there in Orono.
I saw some pictures. It looks amazing.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. We'll talk about it more on Wednesday because I'll be doing a story for this week's edition. It's beautiful. And they spent close to a year and a half working on it. It looks like $1 million. Like, it's really just a beautiful space. Fantastic. That they've put together.
If you stand in the right place in Orono, you could throw a baseball to like 13 places that are great to drink beer.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that awesome?
I know. Where was that when I was young?
It was in York.
Well, let's talk movies. You saw a couple, and I'm intrigued by both of them, and so don't dash my little dreams here about either of these films.
Okay, well, we'll start with First Man. Which is the story of Neil Armstrong and his journey to become the first man to walk on the moon. It's directed by Damien Chazelle of La La Land, Whiplash fame. It's interesting. It's an interesting movie only because these types of stories, I don't care how many times this story gets told, it should always be told and retold and retold, because I think it's one of, if not the greatest accomplishments in the history of human civilization. Putting a man on the moon is one of the greatest things that we as a species have ever done. And yes, it's a story that people are widely familiar with, but if we don't keep retelling it, that won't always be the case. Mm. And I think that's something that that we're always going to want to have there in the cultural consciousness, the idea that even if we haven't gone back, even if we never go back, we went, you know, and that's a huge, huge thing. It's a great movie. It's, Chazelle's a wildly talented director. Like, he's such a great filmmaker. I was skeptical, let's say, of Ryan Gosling, as the lead in this movie. Not that I think he's untalented. I think he's a very talented performer. But the idea of being able to bring to life and to be engaging when you're portraying not just Neil Armstrong, but any of these guys, because they're not only the product of their era, but they're a hyper specific, like, sort of subset of man in that era. And so it's like everyone is taciturn and stoic, and you know, the idea of expressing emotion is not something that any man in the early 1960s was encouraged to do, let alone these astronauts who were performing at the absolute pinnacle of their deeds or whatever you want to call it. It's a beautifully made movie. It's remarkably quiet. Now, for those who are unfamiliar, Neil Armstrong is he was a civilian at the time that he entered the astronaut program. But we get to watch from his time as a civilian test pilot in 1961 through his application to the astronaut program, his training through the Gemini, Gemini, which is how they pronounced it, which I think is one of the many historic details they got perfectly right through the Apollo missions. And we get to see not only his journey to becoming an astronaut, but the struggles in his personal life, which was a part of the story that I was less familiar with. Like he and his wife, who's played by her name's Janet. She's played by Claire Foy, who's also phenomenal. Wow. In this movie. They lost a child to cancer, so it's not only are you watching this man unable to express emotion about, you know, this process that he's going through, but he's not really ever given an opportunity to grieve. And so we see you know, this strange portrait of what it meant. What loss meant to men in that time. And that's those moments at home, which have an almost home movie feel, which are, you know, sort of transposed against the training montages and whatnot that feel much more processed and produced. It's a wonderful dichotomy that leads to a movie that manages to be really gripping and engaging, despite the fact that you know how it ends. Like, you know how the
right, they hoodwinked the American public into believing this actually happened.
Well, one of the first things I said to my wife as we walked out of the theater was, "Oh, so that was how Kubrick did it."
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, and it's
very meta. The film about a film about a film.
Yes.
Are we three deep? Yeah.
Gosling's great. It's maybe the quietest like movie star performance I remember seeing. Like there's no big monologues. There's no big. So everything's very, very spare, very quiet. And so when you see these cracks in the veneer, like when the walls crumble just a little bit and you get glimpses of what's going on inside there, it's really powerful. And that's the sort of thing I wasn't necessarily sure that Gosling would be up to, but he definitely is. All that plus, it's basically a who's who of that guys in the cast. like Jason Clarke plays Ed White. Pablo Schreiber plays Jim Lovell. Kyle Chandler's Deke Slayton.
Kyle Chandler is good in everything.
He's fantastic. Like,
chameleon. Yep.
Not really a that guy anymore because he's always going to be Coach Taylor. But, you know, and then Corey Stahl plays Buzz Aldrin with just the right hint of a-holishness. And it's just down and down the list. Guys like Shea Whigham and Lucas Haas, Patrick Fugit. Like, it's just all these dudes. And granted, they're a little interchangeable because, as you might imagine, the astronaut program back in those days attracted a certain sort of person.
Well, yes.
Then the, you know, lots of close cropped hair, dudes, you know, drinking cans of beer, and smoking cigarettes, and just generally, you know, being white dudes. But
awkward fist bumps.
But it was great. And it was just, it really captured the time, and every single one of those guys, whether they're on screen for 2 minutes or 20. Gave it their all, like just an incredibly talented ensemble that they put together, and all in the service of telling a story. Which again, I can't stress enough. I'm glad it's been told before. This is a wonderful telling of it, and I look forward to seeing what happens down the road when it's time to tell it again.
Well, you know, too, and I'm a big space geek, so I know this, but not everybody knows. They were in a pretty precarious position. If I remember right, Armstrong had to land that sucker on the moon manually, right?
Yes, he did. Yeah. There's that whole sequence is rendered beautifully. The sequence where they the docking maneuver where they spun out of control. It was him and Lovell, I believe.
That's right.
And yeah, that sequence is rendered it's so tense, and it's like, you know, you even knowing. Like intellectually, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. Like emotionally, it still resonates, and that's a testament to the talents of someone like Chazelle, who's just a phenomenal filmmaker, one of the best currently working.
Going back 90 seconds, when you were making your list of that guy actors,
yeah,
Patrick Fugit, is that the guy from Almost Famous?
Sure is.
Awesome, awesome.
I love it.
It just popped up. I was good association. Great actor.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad it's a good movie because I really wanted it to be good, and I like what I've seen in the trailer for the other film, Bad Times at the El Royale, and...
The space movie. Give me some candy.
Oh, no. Here's the thing. I was pretty sure I knew what this movie was going to be because, you know, I gleaned some stuff from the trailers, so I thought I had a pretty good grasp of what the tone was going to be. And, you know, it's Drew Goddard, who, you know, he's done, I mean, he's written a number of really fantastic movies, but the last time he wrote and directed something was The Cabin in the Woods, which is probably the, you know, probably the greatest sort of meta commentary on the horror genre that's ever been made.
Awesome.
And so it's like, oh, so it's going to be like this sort of same sort of deal, you know, this sort of meta commentary, only instead of the horror genre, it's going to be like the noir, neo-noir kind of genre take. I was right about the noir, neo-noir. I was wrong about the meta-commentary, because instead of deconstructing, he just straight up made a fantastic sort of neo-noir thriller.
Oh,
it's so good. Like, it's so good. Like, I was so into this movie, and it was just like, you know, you see the filmmaker, it's like, oh, that's going to be great. And then you start looking at the cast, and you're like, good God, like, how are all these people, like, involved in this weirdo movie? So it starts... it's 1959. This guy just checks in, just walks into a hotel room. There's no context, just opening scene, hotel room door opens, guy comes in and immediately starts tearing up the floor. Tears up the floor, drops some bags into the like underneath space, refixes the floor, puts the carpet back, puts everything back as it was, and just waits. He answers the door. This is all like with music, so there's no dialogue or anything like that. He answers the door, invites the whoever it is on the other side in, and is immediately brutally murdered.
Well, hello.
And then you get just a title card 10 years later, and that's when the movie really starts to kick off. And so the El Royale is this hotel in Tahoe, and its big sort of touristy claim to fame is it's basically split down the middle between Nevada and California. So it's kind of run down. It's past its heyday. And we basically meet these three people in the lobby waiting to check in. There's a vacuum cleaner salesman named Laramie Seymour Sullivan, played by John Hamm.
Love it.
There's a soul singer by the name of Darlene Sweet. And then there's Father Flynn, played by Jeff Bridges.
Oh, God.
And so they're all just kind of hanging around there. We don't really know why they're there. They're just kind of standing because no one's helping them. There's no one behind the desk, no one at the bar, none of that stuff. So they wait around until finally an employee of the hotel, who, as it turns out, might be the sole employee of the hotel, comes to check them in. And so they start going through and signing the guest book, and we start getting little bits and pieces of their stories. While all this is happening, yet another potential guest rolls up, this sort of angry hippie type played by Dakota Johnson. And so they're all going through and checking in and trying to get various rooms for various reasons and whatnot. And it becomes very clear very quickly that no one is telling even a fraction of the truth about their reasons for being there or who they even are. And so we get to watch as these sort of as the real people sort of slowly start to appear when they're by themselves in their various rooms. And that's part of the device, is they split. Every so often they'll just cut and it'd be like just a black screen that says room one or room four or the lobby or what have you. And so you get to watch as these various peoples they start to come clean as far as their reasons for being there, but it becomes very clear very quickly that there's a lot more going on at the El Royale than any of these people have any reason to expect. And so you start to get, you know, the woman who's got some sort of weird thing going with her younger sister and a charismatic cult leader named Billy Lee, played magnificently by Chris Hemsworth. He's fantastic. Like, just all open shirt, like swaying around a lot, like showing off his abs and being all like charming and stuff, but like with that sort of underlying sinister kind of vibe to him. And you know, some people are there for money, some people are there for other reasons. And it turns out that a lot has been going on at the El Royale that none of these people are prepared to deal with.
I want John Hamm to be good because he was so amazing on Mad Men, and I feel like they've never really found the right movie for him.
Yeah, it's been a struggle to find stuff. He's great here. Like, it's a really fantastic role. Like, he actually does a pretty solid about face at one point during the movie. That's That's really a lot of fun. But I mean, across the board, like ensemble wise, like Bridges is phenomenal. Like he's a great actor anyway, but he really brings something special to the table for this one. Ham's great. Hemsworth is a revelation. Like I love that dude anyway. But when he's able to sort of kind of he's got this ability to sort of subvert how good looking he is in ways that a lot of the handsome folks in Hollywood aren't necessarily able to do. So that's really impressive. Dakota Johnson is someone who I run hot and cold on. She's really good here. But I mean, just across the board, the cast is excellent. Stylistically, what Goddard has done, and it's difficult to articulate, but the easiest way I could come up with to describe it is like imagine if Wes Anderson like was evil.
That's awesome.
Like just like
I can do that.
Yeah. Like gets rid of like 95% of the twee stuff and like really leans into the darkness, because it's like a lot of those big wide like establishing shots that sort of dwarf the actors with these meticulously detailed sort of backdrops, whether it's in the hotel or these wide shots and like outdoor shots that are all just really,
it's Kubrick minus the acid.
You know, and it's got a great reliance. The soundtrack is a vital part of the movie. And it's just like, yeah, it's just, I kept coming back to this, man, like this is what would happen. This is what would happen if Wes Anderson went off the deep end. This is the sort of movie awesome. He would make. And it's well written. It's funny in a really dark and twisted kind of way. There are plenty of surprises in the storytelling, and it looks phenomenal. Like, I mean, there's, like I was stunned by how much I figured I was going to like this movie, but I was shocked by how much I liked it.
Two good ones this week. We love it. Thanks, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams, The Main Edge, Pass the Popcorn.